Welcome back. You're watching Stockwatch with me, Alicia Seckham, and tackling your questions on the line this evening is Devin Shute from the Robert Group and Gary Boyson from Rand Swiss as well. So don't forget to send those questions through to us via SMS to 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us this evening. And Gary, firmly in the spotlight, worries over the impact of rising inflation on the upcoming third quarter earnings report that seems to have rattled investor nerves to no end. How shaken are you at this point?
I thought you were talking about the spotlights that were sitting on me from this load shedding. certainly IMF also just highlighting, you know, quite clearly today, obviously upgrading South Africa's growth forecast, which is nice, but generally a very pessimistic world economic outlook today, just highlighting the real fears around inflation that they're feeding into the market, not just because of higher commodity prices, the supply disruptions that we've seen, but also just the increase the average hourly earnings that we saw out of the US on Friday. So it looks like if you've got wage price inflation, if you've got the inflation in terms of the raw inputs of the manufactured goods, you've got supply chain disruptions coming out of China, you are going to see higher inflation, and that could mean higher interest rates, and that generally isn't too good for markets.
How much faster a tightening of those interest rates or loose monetary policy do you potentially see coming to the fore, Devin?
Look, I mean, I think the Fed's got the unenviable task of treading that balance between normalizing rates and really putting a dampener on growth. I think, you know, their tone has changed somewhat from, you know, inflation being purely transitory now to really try to get that balance correct. I think they will still be cautious about it. I think, you know, if they do come on too strong, the risk is probably bigger, I would argue, than if they get behind the curves of hikes. So yeah, as I started up, unenviable position. I think that it's, you know, inflation, how it plays out is probably going to be uneven. I think some of those inflationary pressures will recede faster than others, and that further exacerbates the complexity that these policymakers have as to how they tighten monetary policy. So to your question, there's no easy answer there. And I think you're seeing the market grapple with this. You're seeing bond yields start to tick up and realize that it's probably not as straightforward as maybe as was initially priced.
Absolutely. But in that overall context then, Gary, why are we seeing the pullbacks that we're seeing in Sasol? The oil price is only forecast to go up. And why is coal pulling back when coal is still in demand?
No, it's interesting. I looked at that today because we had Brent crude approaching its near-term highs, at least, and we had Sasol down over 5% today. So the only thing that was actually on it wasn't on the SENS feeds, but it was on the wire feeds, was Moody's initiating a B2 rating on Droslovska. Which is essentially the company that's buying Sasol's sodium cyanide business for about $1.46 billion. That shouldn't really have sent Sasol's share price down. I mean, Sasol's market cap sitting at around $185 billion, so it's less than 1% of the market cap that specific deal. And it's a partner anyway, but that was the only thing that was coming out of the Sasol. Yeah. Obviously, with oil prices coming out, just with that IMF report that came down, we did see the currency getting a little bit firmer. And obviously, Sasol is highly correlated to the Rand oil price. So maybe a little bit of a firmer currency, maybe just taking the shine off the stock as well. Either that or someone knows something that the public doesn't.
Yep, we wait and see. In the interim, though, Devin, do you as an investor use this as a buying opportunity on Sasol?
Look, I mean, I think there are a few positives still in the investment case, notwithstanding how hard the counter has run. I think, you know, the evolution of the business model to be less, you know, less carbon emissions coming out of it, I think is exactly the strategic direction that the business needs to be heading in. I think they've got some fantastic technical skill, but that has to be steered correctly. So I think the business is doing that. We like it a lot. We don't think you need to rush into it. You know, it is fairly volatile, so invariably it's probably going to give investors another chance to get in. And yeah, I would have to agree with Gary there. I think probably some of the Rand strength just took the shine off the stock, and you know, considering the run it's had over the last 15-18 months, you know, maybe an element of profit taking coming in for some investors.
Okay, then Gary, correct me if I'm wrong, but if memory serves, you were buy off Thungela when it separated and listed on its own. The price has now come down from 102 Rand to 89 Rand. Is it still a good time to buy, or would you rather sell?
Listen, I would love to claim Thungela as that entire run as my own, because I think we put out the buy on the show as a stock pick at 22 Rand yeah. You know, the day after listing. And, you know, we just looked at it and said, this is way too cheap. But I think we had a fair value at about 33 Rand, thinking 50% would be enough. It's up over 300% since then. So, well, more than that, 500% since the stock pick, but 300% since listing. So, yeah, I don't know. It's starting to look very, very pricey to me. If you look at the likes of Thungela versus something like Exxaro hasn't nearly had the kind of run Thungela has had. But at the same time, Thungela is getting a lot of institutional support. So if you look at it on the 5th of October, we had Citibank increasing its price target on the stock up from I think it was £4.50 to £7.50. So a significant upgrade there. That kind of helping to fuel some of the excitement. And the fact is that we do have an international energy crisis at the moment. We came into the day today with the kind of news out that China had issued the instruction to secure its winter energy supplies, be that coal, electricity, or oil, at any cost. So when you have a country like China, issuing demands like that, we know that Europe is obviously in the grip of its own energy crisis, to the extent where even the potential energy of hydro dams is empty. So, it's quite a unique situation. So, I mean, the stock has run incredibly hard, so I'd be very, very nervous to deploy new capital into it now. But, a lot of clients kind of coming back and asking us the same question. And it's very, very difficult because at this stage, maybe take a little bit of profit, but let's see where it can go.
Okay, so not necessarily a buyer, but if you're a holder, would you be selling Devon, or would you be anticipating a higher ramp up here? I mean, Gary seemed to outline the whole case that's going to fuel quite a bit of momentum still.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think the world's baseload energy supply is still coal, whether we like it or not. And, you know, unfortunately, what's happened with the move to greener energy, it is that the investment in production of coal, maybe not unfortunately, but the reality is that the investment in new production in coal has just been completely curtailed, and it's unlikely to see, you know, any significant new investment going in there. So what you've had is massive tightness of supply, coal moving, you know, to record levels, and that's really driven those, you know, those counters. So they probably are looking a little frothy where they are, but I think the underlying fundamentals for coal, like it or not, still look pretty strong for the next couple of years. I think that, you know, the demand just completely outstrips what the remaining producers can supply. So I think there is a strong investment case there.
Okay, I'm going to give one to you, Gary. Kumba versus Exxaro. How are the two stacking up against each other in your books?
As I said, Exxaro is a little bit of a concern because it just hasn't, you know, even with higher coal prices and energy crisis, it's got those long-term supply contracts with Eskom at fixed prices, and we haven't seen nearly the kind of share price performance that you'd expect given the underlying coal prices and what's happened over the last year. Kumba, on the other hand, Kumba's had a significant pullback. We still hold Kumba in portfolios. Yes, there are some concerns, especially after the Evergrande issues in China, that we'll see a much more subdued construction environment in China, which will feed into lower, I suppose, demand for steel inputs, so lower iron ore prices. But, you know, I think you've got to remember that Kumba, you know, it's got a high quality lump. Most of the operations at Kumba, I mean, are absolutely exceptional. If you look at the kind of big open pit operations that it has, it's a very solid business. And I think with the little correction that we've seen in the share price recently, I would be comfortable to top it up and add it to client portfolios at the moment.
Okay. Talking, Devon, about construction environments then, locally things seem to be working in PPC's favor. What's your view on PPC after Treasury bans imported cement on state projects? And we've had another one filtered through very quickly on PPC as well. So let me lump that one in. Is it still a buy after a 1,220% increase from its low?
Yeah, the million-dollar question, right? Yeah, look, what I can say is that the brave investors have been well rewarded for what's been a pretty hairy ride, being in the counter, you know, the potential capital raise and all of that. I think they've had some luck, and they've done a few of the good things to start repairing the balance sheet to put them in a good position to benefit from this. I think, you know, whether you are for or against kind of the interventionist policy that Treasury is putting forward here, I think what you are doing is getting a protected local industry that hopefully is going to benefit from increasing demand from Infrastructure SA's rollout and the like of that. I think it's probably run a bit hot, Talisha, if I'm honest on that one. I think it's pretty uniquely positioned, and you know, you're dealing in a company that's had probably one of the longest track histories, if not the longest, left on the JSE. You know, it's got a pure cement play, and I think there will be some nice demand, even if it's purely from the local market.
Okay, let's look at a different growth area. I'd like to know if there is any listed company that produces or distributes plant-based beef and chicken products to restaurants. I'm trying to find the listed company because I see potential in the market. Nothing locally so much, but there are some, Gary, offshore opportunities.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything locally, or if there is something that has exposure to local plant-based meat, I think it wouldn't be a significant portion of revenue. You'd get too much, you know, other bits and pieces. It might be on a famous brand's menu or something. I don't know. But I think the easy one is to go for something like Beyond Meat. Mm-hmm. That's kind of like the big player overseas. You know, I think the reason that we voiced it clear of the idea is just that it's so aggressively priced. It's a theme that I think just has captured the imagination of so many people that it's difficult to justify the underlying cost of the business. So while it's a wonderful story, you know, the valuation hasn't been there. But yeah, I'm not sure, Devon, if you know any other plant-based meat companies?
No, not locally, and I mean even internationally. I think your choices are fairly limited. I mean, Beyond Meat had a spectacular IPO, didn't it? But yeah, you know, those kind of new tech, new world companies are just often, you know, in such high demand, and there's so many funds chasing after the stock. It kind of really, you have to ask some serious questions: how much you want exposure to the theme versus a, you know, a solid investment case.
Okay, you guys are giving me such nice segues to the next question, Devon. So let me throw this one to you. Do you ever look at crypto coins? What kind of investment merit do you see there?
Yeah, look, I mean, how much time have we got, right? I think increasingly there's on the bull case, there's a growing argument for crypto as a differentiated asset class in investing. Now, bearing in mind it isn't regulated globally, but we are seeing it potentially as an alternative form of sound money. There's obviously great tech coming through on the blockchain. So, you know, you've got to be quite specific often in how you're going to invest. You got to know what you're doing. Some of our clients are getting really nice exposure to crypto with exchange traded products. There's a few listed in Switzerland at the moment. And there you're buying, you know, effectively market cap weighted basket of crypto where you don't have to pick what the top token will be today or tomorrow, because they often do change that quickly, but you're getting exposure to the asset class if you believe that's what it is. And increasingly we're seeing investor demand for that. Obviously, your sizing within your portfolio is important based on your risk tolerance.
Yeah. How are you managing your exposure on that front, Gary?
Like Kevin says, how much time do we have? You know, looking at crypto, as they were saying, obviously it's an unregulated product, so you've got to be very careful how you speak about it with clients. I think also the potential gains and the potential risks around crypto are still very, very much unknown. No matter what you might read in the mainstream media. So The way that we've kind of approached it, we actually are tied up with one of the first Swiss banks, or I think it was the first Swiss bank, I think it was the first European bank entirely, to be able to warehouse crypto. You couldn't transfer your Bitcoin or your Ethereum into an account, but you could put in dollars, and they would essentially warehouse those crypto contracts for you. I think it's the same as with Devin's clients. A lot of clients are looking for that exchange protection that comes with a listed investment. So we've done a lot of investigation into the same. I'm sure it's very similar trackers to what Devin is talking about. The main issue for us has always been the custody of the crypto underneath. But there's been some really solid work done in terms of a crypto custodian out of Guernsey that's backed by Nomura. So I think the market is developing, and certainly the formal market in crypto is developing very, very quickly, which I think is positive for crypto contracts overall. How you value them, that is still a total mystery to me. I look at it and they make scarcity arguments, but how can you make a scarcity argument when you can essentially duplicate it or just call it a different name? There doesn't seem to be scarcity there, but I suppose the same would apply. Gold is not scarce if you have platinum and all these other metals, but not unlimited amount of metals.
This takes us down a whole different kind of rabbit hole, I think, Devin.
Like I said, how much time do you have?
Okay, let's see if Devin has more answers on this one, because it seemed to have been a bit confusing for a guest today. I must admit, I didn't see this. So, Devin, I'm hoping that you did. RMH fell 6.4% today based on a SENS that came out. I find the SENS very confusing. Can you provide any clarity?
Yes, I mean, what you've got there is you've got actually two approaches that came to RMH yesterday, one from Brightbridge and one from Fledge Capital for various of their property assets. I think it was somewhat maybe disappointing. You know, the offers were well below what the kind of IFRS NAV values of those were that the company ascribes to those property assets. And there's some nice assets in there. You know, there's Atterbury, locally Europe, the Diversity Durban Property Fund. And I think the market might, you know, be a bit disappointed that this is an opportunistic bid, too, at the same time. You know, is that coincidence? I'm not sure. But I think it could be positive, because what it does show is a kind of an endorsement of confidence in our, you know, property assets, which have been beleaguered recently.
Okay, give us your endorsements this evening. Very quickly, I've left you with literally 20 to 30 seconds each. What's your stock pick, Devin, this evening?
Sure. Mine's one I've done before, local stock. Itel Tile, manufacturer and distributor of tiles. A great little integrated vertically. And I think also what I like about it, like we've seen the cement indigenization protocol being put in by Treasury, that could extend in time to kind of sanitary ware and tiles, and Itel Tile could be a direct beneficiary of that.
Last word to you, Gary.
Okay, so I'm going offshore to kind of honor my load shedding that's going on at the moment. I'm going with Generac Holdings. So it's almost perfectly priced. So just be careful. I think wait for an opportunity to buy into it. But it's essentially a generator company in the US. It's already kind of delivered a 10 bagger, but you know, absolutely spectacular management team, run by a guy called Aaron Jagdfeld, been at the company for Jagdfeld at least, been at the company for 15 years. And spectacular return, getting a lot of institutional support overseas. We've had a nice little pullback in the last 3 months, so I do think that you're going to get an entry shortly. Fundamentals are solid, earnings are solid, and I think South Africans will be very familiar with the types of products they sell. It's essentially generators, yet it is, I think, twice the size of MTN at the moment, and about the same size as Amplats or FirstRand.
Okay.
So a significant player in a specific niche product.
One to watch. Let's leave it there, gentlemen. So many questions, so little time, but we'll catch up next time. Thanks so much for having joined us on the line this evening. That, of course, Devin Shoot from the Robert Group and Gary Boyson from Rand Swiss as well. And just a heads up before I go, do remember to tune in tomorrow at 10 a.m. as we'll be hosting a panel discussion in honor of the Tax Ombuds 8th anniversary entitled 8 Years of Fairness. So be sure to catch that right here on Channel 412. For now, though, have a great evening. We'll be right back.